Chapter 63. Joe Breen was sitting in the front seat of his GTO across the street from the hotel. He was bored out of his mind and was really unhappy about it. He guessed that wasn't so unusual for him. He'd been a miserable, violent fuck his whole life. Life was a matter of survival. Any day you made it through without someone pissing on you was a good day. That was about it. He never gave life much thought beyond that. He never gave much thought to anything. All thinking ever did for Joe Breen was make him more miserable. But since the night he killed that girl, since the night he met Moira, he'd been doing a lot of thinking. He wondered if there was life beyond Mike Prezzetta, if there was a chance for a life with Moira. When he'd think about settling down with Moira, his first instinct was to mock himself. "You foolish fucker. She's likely back at your house laughing up her sleeve at you." But she hadn't run. She hadn't cleaned him out. She genuinely seemed to want to take care of him. In the mornings when they'd get up, she would talk to him about how hard life was back in Ireland, how it was the place where she was from, but that it was never much of a home to her, how she had always yearned for a man to build a home and life around. That was the startling thing. She had fallen even more deeply for him than he had for her. He had always hated that expression about pinching yourself to make sure you weren't dreaming. He hated it because he couldn't understand the concept. His life could never be confused with a dream. And though he hadn't yet pinched himself, he was tempted. Dreaming of a life with Moira had its dark side. For when he thought of a happy life, of Moira's pale and lovely face, it came at a price. The price was the haunting image of Martina Penworth's nude, lifeless body, tumbling out of Ben Salter's bed and onto the hardwood floor. The thud she made when she hit echoed in his ears. It twisted up his guts. Joe Breen had heard the sound of falling bodies many times, some dead, some not. When the dead hit a hard surface, they made a sound like no other, for they were completely at the sway of gravity. They did not tense to self-protect. There was always that hollow thud. And no thud had gutted him like the sound the girl's body had made. He had never wanted redemption before. He never wanted forgiveness. Now, he thought, there would be no moving forward without it. That presented a major problem. Joe Breen hadn't the slightest notion of how to pay the bill for a commodity so precious as a young girl's life. As the gnawing frustration of that notion had taken hold of him, Joe Breen saw Lorraine Frazetta coming out the main lobby of Vic Prado's hotel. Joe couldn't believe it. Mike had told him that Lorraine was back in Lowell, visiting her old aunt. He had no love for Lorraine, she none for him. Joe was sure Mike, with all his money and power, could have done better, much better. Maybe even if he'd been a regular working stiff, he could have done better. Lorraine was pretty enough, if he liked her type. But as much as he hated Lorraine, Joe never once thought she had cheated on or would cheat on Mike. Not because she was afraid of Mike, though that would have been reason enough. It was because she had found out back in high school what could happen if you cheated and got caught. She'd grown up poor in Lowell, like the rest of them, and learned you didn't risk the food on the table and the roof over your head without a really good reason. Then Joe realized if there was anyone Lorraine would betray Mike for, it was Vic. For years, Joe had suspected that Lorraine still carried a torch for Vic, regretted betraying him. Joe reached into his pocket for his cell phone and caught Lorraine as she hesitated under the hotel sign, gave the valet her parking ticket, got in a car, and drove off. He made sure to get a good shot of her license plate as she drove away. When he was sure the coast was clear, Joe got out of the car and walked around the side of the hotel. He wasn't big on subtlety, but he wasn't as stupid as he looked, or as people thought he was. Instead of trying to strong-arm the guy at the registration desk or pay him off, Joe went to where he was sure he would find some Mexicans smoking cigarettes during their breaks. Mexicans loved baseball, and he was sure one or more of them would have recognized Vic Prado. Once that happened, word would spread, and they would notice every move he made inside the hotel. He found just what he was looking for around back of the hotel, behind the hotel kitchen. Some of the Mexicans were dressed in kitchen whites and aprons. Some were dressed in black slacks, maroon golf shirts, and black shoes. There were some women there, too. Some were waitresses, and some were dressed in polyester maids' outfits, with white stockings and white shoes. Everyone but the kitchen help had little name tags on their chests. Joe held up two $20 bills. That got their attention. "Vic Prado," he said. "Room number?" None of the hotel workers said anything. Joe didn't hesitate. He took out another 20, and a young man in a waiter's uniform stepped forward. 618. Joe handed him the money. "Thanks, Mex." "Miguel, not Mexican. I'm from Guatemala," he said, folding up the money and sticking it in his pocket. Breen shook his head. "I don't care if you're from Mars." He took out two more 20s. "The woman in his room today. When did she get here and when did she leave?" Same thing. No one answered until he added another bill. A rotund woman with thick legs and a gap-toothed smile came to Joe.
"She come last night. Stay all night. She leave 20 minutes.
She struggled for the word. She turned to a friend and said something in Spanish. The friend answered in kind.
"She left 20 minutes ago."
The housekeeper reached for the money, but Joe pulled it back. "And were they sleeping in separate beds this morning? Do you know?" he said. This really confused the housekeeper, and she once again turned to her friend. They had a minute-long exchange, but this time it was the friend who spoke to Breen.
"Rosa says she thinks the sheets will need a lot of washing. The woman was making a lot of moaning when Rosa tapped on the door to clean the room. She says she wait until after this break."
Joe paid Rosa and gave the friend a 20. As Joe turned to go, a hotel management type in a dark suit, accompanied by a security type, approached him. "Excuse me, sir," said the management type. "This is an area restricted to hotel personnel. I'll have to ask you to leave." "No need, lad. I was going on my own." Then the security guy made a really dumb mistake. He blocked Joe Breen's path. "You're not going anywhere until we find out why you were trespassing on hotel." In a blur, Joe gave the security type a backhand to the throat. The security guy grabbed his neck, made choking noises, and dropped to his knees. Joe gave a hard guy look at the management type, who threw up his palms in surrender and backed away. No one followed Joe as he left. But instead of the buzz he usually felt when physicality was called for, Joe felt cold inside. It was an unfamiliar feeling, as unfamiliar as the rest of the emotions he'd been experiencing lately. Deep down, though, he knew the cold he felt inside wasn't about this latest bit of violence. It was about Lorraine Frazetta. Until about a week ago, Joe would have delighted in trashing Lorraine's life. He could imagine watching as Mike confronted her with the video of her car pulling away from Vic's hotel. Could imagine the panic in her eyes. Could imagine her fumbling for lies to tell. But as he got back in his car and pulled away, Joe felt no joy in the impending destruction of Lorraine's life. Mike's life would suffer too. Joe told himself that it was really Mike he wanted to protect. That he was protecting himself too, because he doubted Mike would thank him for bringing down his marriage. Joe knew it was a load of shite. The only person he didn't want to protect in this was Vic Prado. That was his only regret in choosing to do what he was about to do. Once he got out of paradise, he put the gas pedal to the floor.